Hey, it's Kira Davis here. Are you like me and looking to get in shape for summer? Well, I've got a deal that can help you. You can eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. One of my favorite things about Factor Meals is how easy they are. You can get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can get back to doing what you love this spring. Are you looking for something a little fancier? Say no more. You can try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. And if you're the type that likes to look out for the environment while you're getting in shape for that summer bod, you'll be happy to know that Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. And fans of Just Listen to Yourself get a very special deal on Factor this month. Head to factormeals.com/JLTY50 and use code JLTY50 to get 50% off your first month. Plus, get this, plus 20% off your next month. I got to tell you guys that again because I know you can't believe it. Use code JLTY50 at factormeals.com/JLTY50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is the FCB Radio Network. Real talk worldwide. Online at fcbradio.com.
If you don't like the way I talk, then why am I on your mind? If you don't like the way I rock, then why are we wasting time? We fight and we argue, you'll still love me blind. If we don't mess this whole thing up, guaranteed I can blow your mind. And tonight I'm alive in a dollar sign. Guaranteed I can blow your mind.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of the Just Listen to Yourself with Kira Davis podcast. I, of course, am your host, Kira Davis, and this is a podcast where we take hot topics, hot button issues, and we take all of the, well, many of the talking points on those issues, and we draw them out to their logical conclusion. So this is an exercise in, say it with me, critical thinking and persuasion. And as always, I want to thank all of our listeners who have been really excited about each podcast that gets released. I want to invite you to join me over at my community on locals.com. That is Davis Nation. I've always wanted to be the ruler of my own country, and locals.com gives me kind of a way to do that. It is a platform that's kind of a combination of Patreon, Twitter, and Facebook. But what it does is it allows me to interact more intimately with readers and fans and friends in a way that's not throttled. I just discovered this last week that my Facebook traffic has been throttled, and I've got notices from regular readers who are saying, I had to go search your name because I wasn't seeing any of your posts and I thought something had happened to you. But nothing has changed in my frequency of posting. It's just Facebook is throttling
my visibility. So even someone like me, who I'm really not that controversial. I mean, when in my regular job as editor at large for Red State, I of course do post very biased articles. I mean, that's the job that I do, right? But even as far as how controversial those would be, even considering the today's atmosphere, they're really not that controversial. So it's just, it's weird that this is happening, but it's kind of a wake up call. Like, no one is going to be immune from this, particularly on my side of the aisle, when you consider the mindset of the people who run these companies and control the algorithm. Now, and maybe this is a different topic for another day, I don't mind. It's a private company. They can do what they want. But when so much of my job depends on the visibility that Facebook provides, and I'm not the only one, it's how it's become, it's time to start looking at other avenues. So Locals.com is another avenue. It's free to join, and you can look at everything that goes on there, but you can't comment or drop your own posts unless you're a subscriber. And there is a fee for subscribing, but I do have a code that will be good until September 13th. My code Davis will give you 2 months free on the site. So you can see if it's something you like. And if not, you know, then just I'll see you around. No big deal. The reason why there's a fee, though, is because that's how we keep the platform censorship free. So when you're not beholden to advertisers and to big tech companies like Facebook or Twitter, you have more leeway. I get to do all the moderation. I get to decide who's in there, who gets to speak, who doesn't. You know, if someone's getting crazy, I have all within my ability to remove that person. And it's in my control and not the company's control. This is a website that was set up by Dave Rubin and Jordan Peterson after they were banned from YouTube and effectively censored in other platforms. They wanted to give creators a way to make content that their readers and fans and friends will enjoy and still be able to, you know, provide an income. Content does take time. Content does take a lot of effort. I was talking to a new friend, Matt, on the phone recently, and Matt was saying, oh, I just really admire how your podcast just flow, like your train of thought. I don't understand how you can just keep flowing and never lose your place. And it's just like a really smooth train of thought process. And I'm like, well, that's the magic, right? Like, I edit a lot. I don't just record this podcast and then send it off to be published. I record it and I have to listen to it over and over again. So if you're hearing an hour of me, I'm hearing 3 hours of me while I edit and clip. And then there's a whole process to get it online. So it seems like content is pretty easy, but it's a lot of engagement. It takes a lot of effort and a lot of time. And so we're always trying to figure out, how do we get compensated for our time, but still give people something that's valuable? So I'm hoping that's what I'm doing over at Locals. Join me, Davis Nation. Just go to locals.com and search Davis Nation, or search my name, Kira Davis, and I'll be over there. Join us. But I bring that up to say that I'll be releasing exclusive JLTY podcasts over there. So we'll still do all our regular stuff over here. But over there, you'll get some bonus episodes that can only be heard by Davis Nation subscribers. So that's something cool that you guys have access to. And then I do videos, I do live chats, I do lots of stuff to really, my goal is just to connect with you guys on a personal level as much as possible. So that's a platform for you to explore if you're interested, excuse me. So today we're going to talk about affirmative action. This is something that's been on my board for a while. I've been looking at it, but the news cycle has been playing tricks on me and it keeps bringing up other topics and I keep having to push it back and push it back. So today we'll be talking about affirmative action. Is affirmative action still relevant? Do we need affirmative action in 2020? I think this is a good topic to discuss these days because we are talking about racial equality, but also there's been some news out there in collegiate land the DOJ is suing Yale for discriminatory practices because Yale, in order to meet their affirmative action quotas, has, well, they're accusing Yale of deliberately squashing qualified Asian and white applicants in favor of other applicants. So they're bringing a discrimination suit, but that's just kind of one leg of a larger effort that they're doing at the DOJ when it comes to affirmative action. And there are a lot of people who don't like that. There are some people who do like it, but anyways, it's in the news. So I thought this is a good time to do this subject. So we have to start with a definition. We've got to start at the start. That's what we always do here. The definition I found on Merriam-Webster for affirmative action is an active effort to improve the employment or educational opportunities of members of minority groups and women. And then it says it's also a similar effort to promote the rights or progress of other disadvantaged persons. The affirmative action was executive ordered into existence in the 60s by JFK, and he ordered that all government contracts go to companies that employ affirmative action policies. And so it's just kind of grown from there. This is why I always say, like, we have to be careful with what we let the feds do at the federal level, because it never stops there. It does grow. So and that's fine if it's something like affirmative action that you like, but if it's something that you don't like, it's probably gonna, it definitely will at some point end up trickling down into your local politics. So I don't know, I always like to keep local politics, you know, in the local areas, and federal politics in DC, I believe that's where they belong. Anyway, that's a whole other discussion, isn't it? I have to be honest with you guys at the beginning here. I have always gone back and forth about my thoughts on affirmative action. I haven't always been in one camp or the other. I have drifted back and forth. I think there are many good points on both sides to be made. And I see every argument. So, and I'm not trying to be a fence rider this time. I hate fence riders, by the way. I'm so opinionated. There's almost nothing I don't have an opinion on. If you ever hear me go, you know what? I just don't care about that. I genuinely do not care, because I care about almost everything. It's a point of contention between my husband and I, who cares about almost nothing. He's like super laid back, and I'm the opposite. So I really am not trying to be a fence rider here. I actually do believe that there are good points on both sides of this. And in my journey on this issue, I have had a lot of conservatives give me wonderful points for why affirmative action. I have affirmative action on my board here, but I have it shortened as AA. So I keep trying to say African-American. I should probably extend that, because if you hear me get these terms mixed up, it's because my board says AA on it. My mind is trying to make it African-American. I should have written that out. I'm too lazy. Anyway, where was I? I've heard a lot of good points from conservatives who say affirmative action has helped and is good and is necessary. So I've actually heard arguments from both sides of the aisle on this issue, and that's, well, really had an effect on how I think about it. And I think, and I'm saying this very cautiously, I think today, as I record this, where I stand, I don't care for affirmative action, and I don't think it's a good policy anymore. I can't talk about if it was ever a good policy, because I'm not familiar enough with the statistics. I just haven't done that research. And, you know, my knowledge on this is only as old as I am. There's a popular radio host who likes to say everyone thinks history was started the day they were born. And in this case, this is kind of true. For me, affirmative action history kind of started the day I was born. So I go into this conversation just being totally honest with you that I don't have all the answers here. And I don't even have every single fact here. I've done my best to educate myself, but I can see that there are holes. But I do think I can make my case for why I don't care for it anymore, and I'm not sure that it's helpful at this point in our history. So there are a lot of talking points for why African American affirmative action is needed, was needed, and still is needed today. Of course, we don't have to dig very hard to understand why people felt it was needed at the time that JFK instituted it. I mean, we were still in the Jim Crow days, and that really wasn't that long ago. Obviously, there was a need to give Black workers and Black Americans more visibility in the workforce, and a need to kind of shock people into seeing a different perspective. I say this all the time because I truly mean it. I know it's starting to become cliche on this show, and I'm fine, I guess, with coining a cliche. But the truth is, perspective is everything. And a lot of people don't even know that they're lacking the perspective. They just think, no, everything's fair here. It's fine. Like, you work hard, you apply for this job, and if you have the right credentials, you'll get the job. That leaves out the idea that there's a whole bunch of, to use a term that my friends on the left use a lot, unconscious bias that goes into hiring practices. There is something in a name. That is not a, I feel a lot of conservatives really make fun of this. Like when somebody writes a story about I know Black people and Asians who will change their names on applications so that they're not discriminated against. There is something in a name. As someone who has employed people and someone who has been an advocate for the unemployed, I can tell you there is. If you get an application and you see one lady's name is Mary and one lady's name is Shaniqua, Shaniqua comes with some connotations. Now, how much of those connotations are unconscious bias and how much of those connotations are earned by us, the Black community, that's a different topic for a different day. It doesn't matter in the context of this argument. The idea here is that because you don't have the perspective of a Black person in your office going, wow, this office could use some more people like me in it because we see the world differently. We have a different worldview, we handle situations differently, and this whole ad campaign or this office setup or whatever job you're doing would look a lot different if we had different perspective in here. You don't have that perspective as a white person. I'll give you a good example, and I've probably used it on this show before. My old podcast network that I used to be with that I got fired from because I was complaining about discrimination, basically. And they accused me of pulling the race card. And I, as we were parting ways through a series of very nasty emails and me being quite, by the way, over emotional about it all, I kind of lost my crap in that exchange. But as we closed our communication, one of the things I said is that, you know, you don't have any Black people on this network and you don't have anybody of color. I think there's one like Indian guy who occasionally did a podcast over there at that point. So you don't have anybody over there. And the powers that be said, well, we do. We want more. We want more minority podcasters, but we just don't know where they are. I mean, as I'm walking out the door, right? But they were like, we don't know where they are. And I said to them, that's because you're not Black. So you don't know a lot of Black people. You might know some, but then how many of those Black people are podcasters? You don't have the perspective to be able to go find those other people. I am Black, and so I share a community with a lot of people. And so I do know a lot of Black podcasters. I do know a lot of Black people in different industries because we do have a tendency to congregate and to commune. You do that with anybody in whatever community it is. If you're Scottish, if you're Polish, you know, if you love dirt bikes, or you find your community and you gravitate towards those people. So for obvious reasons that have nothing to do with discrimination, a Black person is going to know more Black people than a white person for the most part. I'm sure there are some exceptions. So you need that perspective to go find those other people that you want. You want to diversify. You need the perspective in there. That is why a lot of people are unconsciously, I don't really like this term, but I'm going to use it because I think it's a shorthand here. It's a useful shorthand. But a lot of people in powerful positions are very fine people. They're not discriminating. They're not racist, but they don't realize that they don't even have the perspective to see what's missing in their workplace. Does that make sense? So I get it that affirmative action has been there to kind of force, and that's what JFK was trying to do, kind of force that perspective. Hey, you need more people. You won't realize you need more diverse people until you have more diverse people there. And then they go, oh, we could probably use some more people. I know somebody. All right, I'm beating that point. So there are a few talking points here. People say that it evens the playing field. I think that's actually a decent argument. It kind of does. Now, there are people who will say, what are you talking about? The playing field is even. What you need is education. Let's get people educated. Let's get people the opportunities they need. And then when they apply for those jobs, they'll get the right person will get the job. That actually might be true in 2020, but that certainly wasn't true in 1960 or 1950 or even 1970. Do you know what I mean? There certainly was a time that was not that long ago, you guys. Like my grandmother is still alive and lived through that time. So it wasn't that long ago where, yeah, we did need to even the playing field because there was an entire country that was kind of coming out of a very dark civil rights time, and we had to make a cultural readjustment. And so the government decided to help make that cultural readjustment. It was private business that ended up, as it always is, private business, private life in America is really the cultural force. It was private people doing things privately that pushed integration more so than what the government did. But the government felt compelled to do this, and I think this is a case where I couldn't see why. Interesting story. Vegas desegregated before the government forced everyone to desegregate because entertainers in Vegas, particularly guys like Frank Sinatra and the Rat Pack, because of their association with Sammy Davis Jr., were saying, no, you know what? This is ridiculous. We're on the main stage and Sammy has to come in the back door and, you know, me and Dean get to walk in the front door. We're not playing this club if you don't integrate, if you don't allow coloreds into the main space, if you don't allow them to enjoy the show the way everybody else does. We're just not going to play Vegas. And so what happened in Vegas? They had to readjust. The market forced them to readjust. And then that became a driving cultural force for everyday integration. Not to say that what the government did was useless or unnecessary, but the markets are always a driving force in these things. And it's one of the Rat Pack stories I love, because not only is it a great example of loyalty and friendship and all of that, but it's also a great example of how the free market can be so powerful, even more so and quicker than the government reaching in and doing things. So I love that. So there's people who say it evens the playing field. I get that. This is justice. For a long time, a lot of Black people lost jobs to discrimination, to racism. So this is justice. It's a helping hand. It helps people up. It helps lift people up out of where they are. It helps give people opportunities that they actually wouldn't have access to because of their location or because of their race or financial situation. And then another talking point I hear is that neutral policies just don't work. So in order to level the playing field, you've got to force people to do it.
Hey, it's Kira Davis here. Are you like me and looking to get in shape for summer? Well, I've got a deal that can help you. You can eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. One of my favorite things about Factor Meals is how easy they are. You can get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can get back to doing what you love this spring. Are you looking for something a little fancier? Say no more. You can try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. And if you're the type that likes to look out for the environment while you're getting in shape for that summer bod, you'll be happy to know that Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. And fans of Just Listen to Yourself get a very special deal on Factor this month. Head to factormeals.com/JLTY50 and use code JLTY50 to get 50% off your first month. Plus, get this, plus 20% off your next month. I got to tell you guys that again because I know you can't believe it. Use code JLTY50 at factormeals.com/JLTY50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Did Paul Revere really say, "The British are coming"? And how was George Washington chosen to lead the first American army? Join us for the Growing Patriot podcast, a place for curious kids to ask the big questions about our nation's history and get kid-friendly answers from the country's top experts. Help your child learn about and cherish America's exceptional history. Subscribe to Growing Patriots on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts today.
So I guess I'll take these points one by one. It levels the playing field. As I said before, I actually think that it kind of does do that. And people who think that the playing field is already level are, again, I believe that this is a perspective issue from your point of view, because you would never discriminate against anyone and you would never recommend that, and you're not a racist. So from your point of view, that playing field is even. But from someone on the other side of the field who's starting out without the ball and without cleats and without a helmet, it's a that 100-yard stretch looks completely different. So I actually agree with this point, that it does level the playing field in some respect. So I'm not even going to come back on that. Well, I will, because it levels the playing field in the respect that though, and this is the definition that we read, right, that those have been, that have been disadvantaged in the past are now looking at the field and at least seeing that there's a helmet on the 10-yard line that they can pick up, or there's a pair of cleats on the 30-yard line that they can pick up. In that respect, it levels the playing field. Here's my issue. Here's one of the counterpoints I would make to why not African-American affirmative action makes sense. It promotes the playing field, but it promotes leveling the playing field, but it also promotes discrimination. And I truly believe that. And I believe that that is what we're seeing in this lawsuit brought with the DOJ. Some people think that this is a workaround to try to kill affirmative action, and it's just all about getting people of color out of the workplace or out of education, which I think is silly. You've got to assign a lot of nefarious motives to people for doing that. We're not in the era where wholesale the U.S. government wants to make sure that there are no people of color working anywhere. That's hyperbole. That's hysteria. That's not where we are. But there's no doubt that they are trying to change the mechanics of this policy. And I'm not sure that that's wrong. Because going back to how perspective is everything, I can look at this, and from my perspective as a Black woman and as a Black mother who's sending her son out into this uneven playing field, I can look at that and I can say, yeah, we faced a lot of challenges, and some of them are because of our race, and it would be great to know that my son's got like a guaranteed opportunity as he steps out into this life. That would be great to know. My perspective is that it would help him, and it will help him. And I believe it has helped him in getting into the school that he's in right now. They don't have a lot of kids of color there. They're very excited to accept him. They answered immediately. I mean, we sent the application off and got a response in about 2 hours. So I believe it has helped him in that respect. But he's not the only kid out there. He's not the only person out there. What about, I get so, it makes me so sad that we're not allowed to ask about the other person anymore, because to do so is somehow racist or wrong. What about the white kids or the Asian kids? I don't know how we've managed, y'all Asians, I'm so sorry. I don't know how we've managed to just cut you guys out of the minority sweepstakes in this country, but man, oh man, we sure have. That's how I know that this feels like a sidebar, but I'll say it anyway. That's how I know that a lot of this racial tension and, man, I want to say tension, animosity is rooted in politics. There are a group of people out there who only benefit from keeping us all angry at each other all the time. If you solve a problem, then your job is done. If Al Sharpton solves racism, he doesn't have a very high-paying job right now. Right now, he gets paid to issue pardons, racial pardons. I'm not making that up. That's not a joke. I'm framing it differently than he would, right? I'm framing it differently than his fans or listeners. If you're on the left, if you're a progressive listening to this, I'm framing it differently than you would, but it's the same thing. He frames it as a consultant, but what it is somebody goes, they get his blessing, and he dismisses. Jesse Jackson does the same thing. And then he issues a statement, an official statement from his group, and he says, well, we believe this person has paid enough penance. We believe this person is sincere. We support this person. There is an exchange of cash for that. That's not a voluntary act. If Al Sharpton solves racism, he cuts out 90% of his income. There are a lot of people and entities in this country who get paid by making sure we only have problems and never have solutions. So that's how I know this is political, because once the Asian community is a wonderful example of solution oriented race policy. So instead of looking at the Asian community and saying, how do we get to be more like them? How do we get to be a community that values education so much? And trust me, my Asian friends, I understand that y'all have your own issues as well that are cultural and pressures that are cultural. And I understand that. I'm just generalizing here. But how do we look at those people and say, how do we get to be those people where education is so valued in our community and so important that we're overwhelming schools with our presence? We're overwhelming colleges with our applications. Colleges are having to figure out how do they keep Black people out, because there's just so many of us. We're making institutions like Yale and UCLA and Harvard 50%, 70% Black. How do we get to be those people? Are there policies that could help us be those people? Like, the Asian community is a great example to look towards for that, and yet we don't include them in the minority basket. We don't allow them because they've done too well. That's how I know it's a lot of this is political. When you do too well, you don't count. A lot of Black people know about this. People like me, people like a lot of my friends and family that I know, if you are too successful, you don't count as part of the quote struggle. So I can say in an argument situation, hey, I did this. I did that. My husband and I clawed our way out of poverty. We moved ourselves up to the middle class. We got college educations. We're successful Black people. We've managed to take advantage of the current system that we have in this country, we've managed to avail ourselves of all the opportunities that America herself provides. So look at us. You know, we are a success story. Look at Jay-Z or Beyonce or Barack Obama. None of those people ever count in a discussion about racial struggles, ever. When you're too successful, you don't get to count as part of the victim class. That's how we know that people's intentions on this issue are political and not genuinely solution-oriented. Because otherwise, we would be able to celebrate the successes, but we don't. A lot of times, we look at people like me or like Obama or Beyonce and Jay-Z, and we say, well, their accidents or their mistake, which is very insulting. It negates all of the work that they did. And I guess it's because it doesn't fit into the narrative that you'll never win unless somebody else gives something up for you. That's politics. That bothers me. So you don't, sorry, Asians, you don't get to be a part of this racial group, this basket of victimhood. But we could learn a lot from looking at the Asian community and how they view education and how they value education. But because they've been so successful, they don't even get to be a part of this equation. We don't celebrate the fact that in a country that actually interned Asians during World War II, actually put them in camps, in a country that did that not that long ago, we are now looking at universities in which Asian enrollment is 50% or around there. That's a big deal. That's huge progress. If we were interested in making progress, we will really look at that and see how that happened. What did they did? What can we model? What can we change? What are some things that the federal government could do to kind of mimic what happened in the Asian community? Those are questions we could be asking if we included Asians as minorities, but we don't. So to loop back around, what about those people? If the idea of affirmative action is to improve the employment or educational opportunities of members of minority groups and women, so anybody who's not a white male or Asian male, then how do we improve those opportunities? Right now, the way those opportunities are improved is by quota, not by qualifications. And we'll get to that in a minute and why that may be good or bad. But that's how they're counted, right? By that logic, that necessarily means that there are white kids. Let's just say it. Let's stop using all these words. There are white kids and Asian kids who have worked very, very hard, got their, you know, perfect attendance at school and got their 4.0s and did all of the clubs and worked their asses off to be able to get into some of these elite schools. Certainly some of them have been pushed aside for minority candidates. If you can only allow so many new students a year and you have to reserve a quarter of those spots for people who might not make the grade, quote, but who fill a diversity quota, then necessarily you are denying a white kid or an Asian kid who maybe did qualify academically for that spot, you're denying them that spot. So that is discrimination. It's not reverse discrimination. I hate the term reverse discrimination. I'm reading White Fragility right now by Robin DiAngelo. I'm going to give you all an exclusive review of that over on my Locals page when I'm finished. She actually says some decent things. Some things she contradicts herself on, she doesn't realize. But one of the things that her and I agree on is that there's no such thing as reverse discrimination. Discrimination is discrimination, period. It's just the type of discrimination that we're willing to accept. And we're willing to accept discrimination against white kids. And I know it's easy to be like, well, they've had all the chances, but only in theory. Go to your neighbor who's white and ask them about their personal story, about their personal chances. Why should that kid be punished? Look, I've got friends who were raised lower middle class, raised in a farming and fishing community, lived a very simple life, who couldn't get into the college of their choice, even though they worked really hard in school, because they had to be pushed aside to meet a quota. And those people aren't racist, and those people don't discriminate against anyone, and those people are just good, decent people who worked hard and had a dream about what they could accomplish when they worked hard. Go talk to that person and ask them to tell you their story. These are real people. We're looking at these big concepts. We're not looking at the individual. This is one of the problems I said we had in the police brutality thing. You can go back and listen to my episode on Ahmaud Arbery or George Floyd. I think this is the one where I really break this down. But part of the problem that we're dealing with in our country is that we have learned to look at each other as the other instead of ourselves. So we are completely desensitized to, and that goes both ways. I'm not talking to black people or white people or Asian people. That goes all ways. We all do that. We have the tendency to otherize people who aren't like us. And then we can't empathize. They're not real people to us. They don't have real feelings. But this is a case where people do have real feelings. And these consequences have a further reach than just for black people. Is it fair to discriminate against somebody based on the color of their skin? It is not. That is not justice. And that's what worries me about affirmative action as it stands in 2020. It is a hop, skip, and a jump to the flip that makes discrimination against black people okay. A hop, skip, and a jump. Everybody thinks that the new rules are going to apply to the other guys, but never to yourself. This is why I was on a podcast yesterday and with a liberal commentator. It was kind of a back and forth. The name of the podcast is called Braver Angels. And I brought up the fact that I don't think government is the answer to a lot of these issues that we were talking about. And the lady that I was speaking to, you know, when it was her turn to respond, just all of a sudden made it out to be that I don't like government. I don't like my paved roads and we need government. It's silly that we don't need government. All I was suggesting is that we don't need as much government, and that it's not good to trust a government that has proven itself untrustworthy, particularly to African Americans throughout the entire history of this nation. It doesn't make sense to ask the person who broke it to fix it. That's all I was saying. But really, my real point is that it's not about being a conservative or a libertarian or being a progressive. For me, it's about the idea that the rules work the same for everybody. So before this comes back around again to bite us in the ass, let's just get rid of those bad rules and start from a place of true justice. One of my very favorite quotes in the whole world is from the biography of George Washington, written in 1819, I believe, by his friend who was also the first Supreme Court Justice, Supreme Court Chief Justice, John Marshall. And he spent 20 years writing this book. It's fascinating. I've talked about it before in the show. It's fascinating. It's 7 volumes or something. I'm only on like the first volume. But he started at the beginning, the birth of the nation. So it's actually a history lesson. And he had interns he sent all across the country for 20 years. They gathered information and texts and documents, and they just documented the progression. What he wanted to do was show the progression of how we got to a place where we got a guy like George Washington. It's fascinating. You will learn all kinds of stuff. It's a thick read, right? It's a tough read because it's old, like older English also. So it's a lot of focus and concentration, but you will learn stuff that you never learned in school from that book. It's incredible. But one of my favorite quotes is this quote where he's talking about how in the beginning, the colonists rose fighting with each other, and one group would overthrow another and outlaw their religion. And then that group would come back and overthrow another, and then they'd outlaw that religion. And it was just this big circle. And this is his quote. "So true is that men close their eyes on encroachments committed by that party to which they are attached, in the delusive hope that power in such hands will always be wielded against their adversaries and never against themselves." The delusive hope. The delusive hope that the rules will only ever apply to the people you don't like, and they'll never come and apply to you. That's dangerous. So when I say I don't want the government involved in this, it's not because I'm some anarchist. It's because I don't want the rules to get switched up. I want the rules to apply the same way to everyone. And I don't want us to get to a place in history somewhere down the road where you and I aren't alive, but our children or great grandchildren are. I don't want to get us to a place where we flipped the script again and now black people are back to where we started. It's very foolishly naive to believe that the wheels of time can't turn that way. Look at the change we've seen in this country in the last 10 to 20 years. Look at history. Look at the Roman Empire, the Greeks. These things have lasting effects. So it's my notion that discrimination of any kind in the workplace or in school, we're all discriminating, right? We all have our own discriminating tastes. That's the meaning of the word. There are in churches, we discriminate against non-believers for employment, right? It doesn't make sense to be a pastor of the church if you don't believe in God. That's a discriminating factor. So discrimination isn't a bad word, but when it comes to how we're talking about affirmative action and how we're talking about, quote, leveling the playing field, it is. And it also removes the very personal effects on individuals. It's not fair to work your whole life towards something, to give up weekend parties or dating or a, you know, regular high school experience or whatever it is you've given up, to give up all that in the search of this opportunity, in search of this future that you've imagined. It's not fair to then be told, I'm sorry, you're not allowed to have this opportunity because of how you look. The whole purpose of affirmative action was to combat that as it applies to black people, but it doesn't help to apply it to other people. So that's my argument against the idea that it levels the playing field. From a certain perspective, it does, and that's why I see that point. I do get it, and that it's justice. But I don't think it is justice, because justice, a lot of people think justice is revenge. That's how we're defining it these days. That's how all these rioters and weirdos in the streets, like in Portland and Seattle right now, that are still burning stuff up, that's how they're defining justice, as vengeance, as kind of knocking down one group to raise another. And that can never be justice. That is not how God defines justice, first of all. And you guys know I like to take it to church on here every now and again. That's not how we define justice in reality or even in the spiritual realm. It can't be justice when you're denying someone their human rights in order to give human rights to someone else. Justice, true justice, goes hand in hand with mercy. They are two sides of the same coin. They are companions. Justice includes mercy. So justice would, in this case, would look like, quote, evening that playing field. But the mercy part of that would be, quote, not making other people pay for that. And I've heard a lot of people, if you go, this white fragility book is a lot of, about this in there. And then if you go to certain Black Lives Matter org sites, they'll say the same thing. If you say that, if you're worried that other people are going to get hurt, or if you say it's not fair that white people get hurt because of this policy, again, we never talk about Asians. Sorry, y'all. I'm sorry that you don't exist in this conversation. That's not fair. But anyways, this is just the dominant group being mad that they got to move over. Again, that's just lumping people into, that's just generalizing people. You're not taking into account justice for the individual and mercy. Because even if you believe that white people deserve to lose everything because of the history of this country, to make them do that would not be justice, because there's no mercy in that. And justice is not justice without mercy. It is not. There is an element of mercy in justice. Does that mean that the judge lets the convicted murderer go in the name of mercy? No, that's not what that means. Everybody pays the price for their crime. But mercy has different dispensations, right? Maybe the mercy is just not holding somebody accountable for the crimes of their father. Justice and mercy go hand in hand. So I don't call that justice. It promotes discrimination, even if it, quote, levels the playing field. It's too dangerous. It's too dangerous of a game to play, in my mind. And the black community has always been on the receiving end of the initial negative results of any policy, always in this country, always. And so this one will be no different, because I believe, you know, history is cyclical. at some point, 100 years, 1,000 years, 2,000 years, I don't know. At some point, the script could get flipped. And then we've just condemned our great-great-great-great-grandchildren, all that. Maybe I think too far ahead, but I don't know. I'm a big thinker.
Hey, it's Kira Davis here. Are you like me and looking to get in shape for summer? Well, I've got a deal that can help you. You can eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. One of my favorite things about Factor Meals is how easy they are. You can get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can get back to doing what you love this spring. Are you looking for something a little fancier? Say no more. You can try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. And if you're the type that likes to look out for the environment while you're getting in shape for that summer bod, you'll be happy to know that Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. And fans of Just Listen to Yourself get a very special deal on Factor this month. Head to factormeals.com/JLTY50 and use code JLTY50 to get 50% off your first month. Plus, get this, plus 20% off your next month. I got to tell you guys that again because I know you can't believe it. Use code JLTY50 at factormeals.com/JLTY50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Did Paul Revere really say, the British are coming? And how was George Washington chosen to lead the first American army? Join us for the Growing Patriot podcast, a place for curious kids to ask the big questions about our nation's history and get kid-friendly answers from the country's top experts. Help your child learn about and cherish America's exceptional history. Subscribe to Growing Patriots on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts today.
Instead of talking about it, people say, I'll address this point, it's a helping hand, which is the same thing. It levels the playing field. So I just gave you this long speech about Asians and how we don't look to them as examples of what you can do as an immigrant, as a, quote, minority, as a, quote, person of color. We don't look to them as examples. They're too good. They do too well. So we just pretend they don't exist. And then we keep saying, well, look, see, it's not fair. There's no way for people to achieve. There is a way for people to achieve. Southern California has a huge Asian population from all over parts of Asia. And many of them do extremely well. And many of them are first generation immigrants who came here with nothing. Now, there is a contingent that have, you know, that were wealthy and were able to move, of course. But a lot of the, like, when you're talking about people from the Philippines or from Thailand, or it's not just people from rich folks from China and Japan. There's people that escaped despots and communism and starvation to come here, and they came here with nothing and now own stores, now own dealerships, or their children are doctors or lawyers. So there's a way to do it. And I'm not saying that that way is as easy for Black Americans, because we have a different history. Being an immigrant is different than being a Black American. That's different. I keep saying that. But my point that I'm trying to make here is that we should be looking and saying, how can we do this without stripping the mercy angle out of the justice angle? How can we do this without making the federal government be responsible for forcing quotas onto colleges? I'm talking particularly about colleges in this example and in this segment. We should be asking that. What maybe we need to do is rethink college. God knows that right now we are rethinking education in this country as it pertains to how children learn and what is necessary to learn. We're starting to see that the old structure might not be the best structure anymore. Society has changed. We've moved everything online. So much is different. Maybe we need to be flexible in our education approach as well. And there are many people who are working against that because people don't like change. And also it forces some, you know, change will end the very lucrative career of some folks. But what if we made a change to college, to what we think college is, as opposed to who we think should be there? What if we change the entrance requirements, not the quotas? So if you're looking at a public school system that necessarily condemns Black boys and girls to poor scores, to failing, to prison, you know, you're looking at this education system that's been set up. You can go back and listen to Systemic Racism episode for how I feel about that. That's been set up to disadvantage the disadvantaged. Then we're not going to change that overnight. But that's not to say that because you don't make an A on all your tests that you're not an intelligent person, or you don't have anything to offer, or you're not a world changer. Maybe we need to change the idea that the people who are the best for Yale or Harvard aren't the people with the highest grades. Maybe we need to look at how we measure accomplishment, how we measure achievement, and stop measuring it by a standardized test that may or may not be amenable to certain people in certain regions, and stop measuring it by grades that don't reflect the content of a person's character or what their life is about. You can be a D student and be brilliant, and many are. But if you come from a home where you're dealing with gangbangers every time you step outside, you don't have a dad in your home, your mom's working two jobs to make ends meet, there's no opportunity in your neighborhood, yeah, you're a little distracted. It's pretty hard to make A's and score perfect scores on those standardized tests when you're fighting to survive every day. But yet that survival skill, that life survival skill, is invaluable. And in fact, it's probably more important than anything you could learn in a book. It will dictate how well you do in your life. It will dictate whether or not you change the world around you or change the world you're living in at that moment. That is a very valuable metric, but the colleges as it stands now have no way to measure it. So we only measure it by this grading. So yes, Asian kids do score higher when it comes to grading. They have a different view on education. They have different disciplines. They have a different way of doing it. And it's been quite successful, academically speaking, as we all can see. Then you shift the culture of university, right? Then you have a shift. So then we don't have to worry as much. This is my theory. There's no place in which this is in practice. I don't think so. I don't know if it works or not. But this is my theory. This is the argument I'm making to you. I believe that then there can be a day where you don't feel, if you're a progressive and a leftist, that you don't feel like the government needs to have their hands in this. Because the standards are different. What we judge as success is different. See, here we are as Black Americans trying to squeeze into this narrow version of the dominant culture of what success is, instead of demanding that we expand the definition of success in a way that makes sense. Failure is not success, but surviving is. Working hard is. Working three jobs while you go to high school is. Raising your brother and sister because your mom works or your mom's absent or you have other family, crazy family situations. That's a sign of success. That's a person you can put in charge of your business because you know they can get stuff done. They get what they need done. Maybe we need to change the metrics here, change the culture of academia. I think actually that's what we need to do. That's what I think this lawsuit is about. It's not about reversing affirmative action or punishing people of color or black people. I believe it's about changing the metrics, changing the culture of academia, and that's why so many in academia don't like it. Everybody wants change as long as they don't have to be the ones to change. Everybody wants everybody else to lose the way, you know, their mode of working and the culture in the area where they earn money, but they don't want to be the ones to do that. So maybe we look at changing the entrance requirements instead of the quotas, and that way we expand the definition of achievement, and that way we necessarily expand the pool of people who we can invite to a Yale or a Harvard and still maintain that kind of elite status. Because goodness knows, God knows, God in heaven knows that the grade on your math exam has absolutely nothing to do with how productive you will be as a human being in this society. Some people say that affirmative action lowers standards, and I do believe that. I think that's just a math problem. I'm not saying anything about this racial group is dumb, like, oh, we black people are just dumb, and so if you force people to take us, you're just going to get a bunch of dumb people in there. That's not what I mean at all, imaginary listener who's shouting back at me right now. It's a math problem. What it does is it limits your pool. And when your pool is limited, statistically speaking, the standards get lowered. So let's look at the areas of employment that people go into. First of all, here's the thing. Black people are only 13% of the population. That I think, what's this, like 20 million, 22 million it puts us at, something like that. So we're already a smaller pool to begin with, just numbers wise. So how many of those people go on to become professional photographers? How many? I use this example at Vogue, people getting on Anna Wintour, which I'm fine with, by the way. She doesn't seem like a great person, but for not hiring more black photographers. But I thought, you know, there's a flip side to that equation. How many black photographers are there out there? How many black people care to join the photography community? Forget about the opportunities, just care to at all, just are even interested in it at all. That pool's small. So already you're pulling from a pool that's already limited because we're only 13% of the population. Now you cut that pool down to just a few hundred people. And of those few hundred people who make it to the level, who have enough training to get to the level of shooting for a Vogue. But now you have to pick a minority photographer from this smaller pool. But the wider pool might have people who are far more qualified, who have far more experience, who have a better eye, who have worked in different places, or who just like the job more. But you don't get to choose any of those people. Because the pool is smaller, your chances of finding a really qualified person are more limited. Not that they're not there. Of course not. But just it's a math problem. It's all it is. It's just math. So in that respect, yes, it does lower the standards of a business. When you are dictating how the pools in which people can pull from to employ workers. And then to me, the result of that is it casts a pall over achievement. It's a stigma. So there are a lot of people who will, in a way, can foster racism, right? It can foster racial tension and discrimination, because then there are people who will look at you and they'll never quite believe that you got to where you are because of your hard work, and you'll have no way to prove it to them. And for some people, that might be fine. This is me looking at the other side of this issue again, right? Like, you might be fine with that. You don't care. And I get that. And I think that's a legit view, by the way. Like, I don't care if anyone thinks I earned my way here or not. But I do care. That actually means a lot to me personally, because I did work really hard to get out of where I was. And I came from a pretty bad situation. And I didn't even know that there were affirmative action policies. I grew up in Canada. And then when I moved to the United States, I kind of missed the political boat on affirmative action. When I was applying for colleges, I didn't even know to apply for minority scholarships. I didn't. I paid for college myself and with loans. I didn't understand. And I can remember being in a debate with somebody. I know that people find that hard to believe, but that's the truth. And I can't tell you what the college did for me as far as quotas. I don't know. I'm dating myself, but this would have been the mid-90s. So I don't know, like, how serious they were taking affirmative action at that time. I don't have the ability to suss that out. But I know that I personally didn't take advantage of any affirmative action policies, not because I didn't want to. I was too proud to. I just didn't know they were there. I was just that naive. And so I can remember doing a radio show, one of my first radio shows. I was doing a debate with a progressive, and we were talking about affirmative action. And at that time, I was saying, I think I was in the, I'm definitely against affirmative action camp. And so the person said, yeah, but you wouldn't be where you are without affirmative action. How many minority scholarships did you take to get yourself through school? That's affirmative action. And I was like, none. And they were like, what? And I was like, I didn't take any. I didn't even know they existed. Where I came from, I wasn't special. I was gross. I was different. There wasn't, like, being Black where I came from wasn't something that people sought out or wanted to help. So I grew up with that, and I assumed that that's how the world was. So I didn't even know. And I went to school in an all-white farming and fishing community, so there was no one to even come alongside me and say, hey, here's all this other stuff for you. I didn't know. So I didn't use affirmative action policies like that to get where I was. And I remember feeling so hurt. And the person was just making an argument. They weren't trying to hurt me personally at all. They thought they were making a good point, right? They were assuming that I had taken advantage of all these things. But in my spirit, I can remember that cut so bad. And there have been several times since then in my life where people have suggested, by the way, almost all of them are people of color. Just on the other side of the ideological aisle from me, when I argue about this issue or when I debate about this issue, almost all of them are minorities who tell me, you got to where you are because of affirmative action. You only do what you do, Kira, in the conservative space because you're Black. And that's the only reason people keep you around or people pay you. And I can remember each time it cuts my spirit, because I know my life, right? This goes back to looking at people as individuals instead of groups. This is what's wrong with identity politics. Identity politics can have a place, but the way we use it today is so wrong because it purposefully strips us of our individuality. And the greatest minority is a minority of one, is you, the individual, but it strips us of that. See, these people didn't know my life. They didn't know where I came from and what I had to fight to get out of and what I did fight to get out of. And maybe in a lot of ways to this day, even in my 40s, still fighting to shrug off those feelings of inadequacy, that I'm not enough, that I'm not good enough, that I'm not pretty enough, that I'm not nice enough, that I'm not tasteful enough. All of, you know, we all deal with that, right? You carry baggage. I got baggage too. But I know, looking back on my career and my whole life, I know what I did for myself and how I scraped. And there were people along the way that God put in my path that helped me. I wasn't alone. I'm just saying, I worked frigging hard. And to my knowledge, did not take advantage of any affirmative action, blatant affirmative action policies. Again, I can't tell you what people do behind the scenes. I don't know if there's people that are like, well, she's not really qualified, but she's Black, so we'll take her. I don't know. I've never been privy to those conversations. But there is an element of offense when someone tells you that you only made it because you were a quota. I don't even know how anyone could take that otherwise, frankly. This lady, Lorena Gonzalez, that gave us this disastrous AB5 bill that killed the gig economy here in California. And I did do an episode on that way early on. I think it's called Should We End the Gig Economy? Go back and listen to that. We're still having this fight, by the way. As I record this tomorrow, Uber is probably pulling out of this state because AB5, which was meant to get them, killed them. It also killed 350 other job categories. But that's another episode, which I literally did record. So you can go back and listen to that. But the lady that authored that proposal, she's a real piece of work. She's a union rep. That's not hyperbole. That's not an accusation. That is her. That is what she calls herself. She's, when someone asked her if she represents the union in the California Assembly, she said, I am the union. So I'm not trying to cast aspersion. I'm using her own description of herself. Anyway, she was right. She's a lawyer also. And she was talking about affirmative action policies on Twitter the other day. And she said, I would not be a lawyer to this day if it weren't for the affirmative action policies at UCSB or wherever she went. And she was really proud of that. And I was like, to me, what you're saying is you weren't qualified to be a lawyer. And so quotas put you in a position that you probably shouldn't be in. And this lady should not be in the position she's in for sure. And she's a piece of work. Look her up. Lorena Gonzalez. I was flabbergasted that she was bragging about that, that that was a good thing to her. To me, to my mind, what I heard and thinking back on my experiences with affirmative action and how people have accused me of not being qualified because of affirmative action, I thought to myself, how can she be proud of that? Doesn't that take something out of what she's done, what she did to earn her way? Even if it was more challenging than it would have been for a white person, like, I want the privilege of being able to say, I did this. And it would be one thing. This is why, again, I go back and forth, because there's history here to think about, right? I guess my question is it, do we need it now? Because there was a time when, yeah, actually my ability to work hard probably wouldn't have been enough. And that time wasn't that long ago. That's the truth. It's not a myth. You know, Jim Crow is not a myth. That's real. There would have been a time when it wouldn't have mattered how hard I worked. I just would have been thwarted by somebody at some point getting to where I'm going. But that is not America today. I can already hear people going, yes, it is America. I mean, I was listening to a podcast the other day and the guys were complaining about Trump or whatever. And they were like, you know, America's like, we're not going to have a country in 2 years. It's like, everybody calm down. Every election cycle, whoever you hate, if they win, that's the person that's going to destroy America in 2 to 4 years. Every election cycle. We say this all the time. We're always like, America is the worst country for opportunity. And it's so racist here. And yet people dying to get here. No one's dying to get out. You don't have to kill yourself to get out of America. It's super easy to leave. But people kill themselves trying to get in. So I'm not trying to argue that America doesn't have problems, people. I'm just asking you to just have a little perspective. That's all I'm saying. Have a little perspective on where we are. We've come a long way. It pisses me off that I have to give this qualifier every time I say it, because intelligent people should already know this, but we're not necessarily dealing with intelligence these days in these discussions. It's a lot of emotion. I shouldn't have to qualify this statement with, America has a lot of work to do. We know. That is implicit in my statement that America has come a long way. My grandfather would roll over in his grave if I dared to compare my situation in 2020 to his in 1955. He would slap me in my mouth. It is not the same thing. So let's not pretend it is. That doesn't mean that there's not challenges. There's that qualifier again for y'all, because some folks want to get mad right away. And they don't want to hear. All I'm saying is there's value in struggle. And something we're doing not just on the racial level, you know, racial politics level, but all across the American culture, in education and in family situations. Something we're doing right now is we're equating struggle with discrimination of some sort, as if the goal of life is to remove all struggle. But do you know who you get when you remove struggle from a person? Paris Hilton. You get into, I'm using her as an example. I don't know who Paris Hilton is today. She's 40. I mean, she's over 40 now. So she's like an adult woman. Maybe her life is a lot different. I'm just using her as a touchstone because I think a lot of people know what I mean when I say a Paris Hilton. So forgive me, Paris Hilton, for casting aspersions on your character as of today. You're just fitting a narrative here, a good example. But what you get is a, quote, Paris Hilton. Somebody who is entitled, somebody who really doesn't have a regular job, doesn't understand the regular functions of society and how they fit in and what their responsibilities are to another person. Oftentimes that person will be quite lacking in any kind of gripping personality. I find those people to be quite dull. See, when you remove struggle from people, you remove achievement. Achievement depends on struggle. Does this mean, here comes another qualifier. I guess I have to do that because this is the show. Does this mean that I think Black Americans should be struggling? In fact, we should make their lives harder so that they can struggle more. No. My dog's barking out there because she's telling me to wrap it up, B. Wrap it up, Kira. All right, we're coming to the end here. No, I don't mean that we should be purposefully making people's lives more difficult, but the idea that the function of government and all of us is to make everyone's life easy as possible, that is a dangerous idea. It's a sickness. And it's a sickness that gives us underachievers, which is what we're dealing with right now in America as we look at these idiots burning up our businesses and our homes across the country for no one knows even what anymore. The real protesters have already gone home, probably going back to work like normal people. The weirdos are the ones, these are the ones we've raised with the idea that our goal is to eliminate all struggle because any struggle is discriminatory. And so we've created a generation of kids who are so bitter about any type of roadblock or any type of struggle, and also bitter about not having that. This is subconscious, by the way. There's a bitterness that comes with not having anything to overcome. We're kind of naturally wired to survive, right? We're naturally wired to achieve. And when we don't have, when life gets easier, we start making things, we start making our own obstacles because that's what feels natural to us. That's kind of ingrained in the human psyche. We start making our own problems. That's, a lot of where we are right now. So I do believe that quotas and affirmative action cause resentment because it casts a pall on the achievement of those who have really earned where they are. Does this mean I think the government has no role to play here in sort of, quote, leveling that playing field? That's the point I keep going back to because that's the point that I flip-flop on, right? And I think I've made my case for why I do. I believe that certainly we had to amend a constitution. You know, we've had to restore constitutional rights to Black Americans off and on throughout the years. And I'd like to get to a point where we don't have to keep doing that. But I don't think that the way we do that is codifying discrimination. That's not justice. And I can only go to, I was on this podcast that I was on, Braver Angels, just yesterday with this other woman. She's a radio host in LA and very accomplished and comes from a very good, an amazing pedigree. I won't blow up her spot here, but an amazing family pedigree. Just it was really fascinating talking to her. Like, it's just a very successful Black woman in an industry that I would love to be a bigger part of. And I had a great time talking to her. But one of the things she said was, we need government to fix these issues, right? We had to have government to put, you know, we had to have an amendment. We had to do, the idea was that these rights weren't ours in the first place. And I've always believed that all of these rights are ours, even if the founding fathers didn't mean them for us. That's the glory of that language in the Constitution. The point is that I was answering a question about justice and about social justice. And I said, I'm uncomfortable with the term social justice. I don't like it. I only believe there's one justice. There can't be different versions of justice. There has to be one universal truth. I believe there's God's justice. That's the standard by which we measure it by. And she said, well, Kira, not everybody's a Christian. Not everybody has faith. So we define justice differently. To me, that's the problem. You don't have to have faith to believe in one standard of justice, by the way. I didn't have time to go. I was trying to honor the format, so I didn't have time to argue every point. And I wanted to let her make hers because she was making good ones. And but that was one thing that she bristled against, the idea that there's God's justice. And to me, I do believe there's God's justice, but I understand you might not believe in God, or I understand you might not believe in the same God. I get that, but I still think the concept floats. The idea that there is one standard for justice, it is so dangerous to divide justice up. There's no case in which that you can make to me in which justice applied unevenly is ever a good thing. And that it only ever stays a good thing. It might have some very satisfying consequences for a while, but there's nothing in the word of God that tells me that justice and mercy involve discriminating against someone because of how they look or because of who their parents were or their grandparents or their great grandparents. I don't see anything in the word. And I could be wrong. If I am wrong, go ahead and hit me up and tell me where I don't see anything in the word where it says that it is okay to despise a person and strip a person of their property and their achievements because of how they look. But if I'm wrong, tell me. So if the question is affirmative action needed in 2020 and is it a good thing? My position today is no. I actually don't think it's a good thing. I think this case with Yale and what the DOJ is doing there is a great example. Discrimination produces discrimination. And if we want to keep these standards open for all of us in the future, no matter how the wheels of time change, we need the rules to apply evenly to everyone. They have to. Because if they don't, then someday we will be on the victim end of this policy once again. And the lady I was arguing with yesterday, excuse me, not arguing with, debating with yesterday, kind of admitted that. She didn't mean to, but she kind of admitted that. She admitted that this country has seen so many changes. And right now she likes the changes she's seeing, but we couldn't. That's not always how it was. I find it such a naive and childish position to imagine that where we are today in this moment is where we'll always be. The idea that our notions won't change, our ideologies won't change, what we think is politically correct will never change. This is where those definitions stop. I mean, I'm looking at the baby boomers who are the most liberal and progressive people I know, and they're getting kicked out of jobs because they're not liberal and progressive enough. And they're the ones who even started the whole idea of what it means to be a progressive. Times change. If we don't want to be on the receiving end of bad policy, then we need to eliminate bad policy altogether. But that doesn't mean that we don't have a part to play in rectifying the policy and rectifying the issues. That doesn't mean that Black people aren't disadvantaged in professional America or in collegiate America. That doesn't mean that. I just mean that the solutions may not be quotas. Because I do believe quotas cause more problems for all of us at the end of the day. But right now, in particularly for people who aren't Black. And that's not fair. And it's sort of pathetic to say that it's okay that it's not fair, because someday something will be unfair for you. Have I beaten this horse to death yet? I have. So I guess, no, I don't. I see the issue as us figuring out other ways for minorities, particularly Black Americans, to get to where they need to be. Other ways that include starting doing the hard work. And this is the other, everybody wants a policy that's going to fix something overnight. The hard work comes in getting in our communities and doing the work early, getting to moms before they have their babies so that we can walk alongside them, those who don't have a partner, and we can help those babies be born into a nurturing environment. It involves letting parents have the choice as to where they want to educate their kids. It involves making sure that Black Americans understand that there are business opportunities out there, understand the mechanics of how our democracy works and how the free market works. It involves things like that, mentoring, programs, ad campaigns. I've gone on long enough. I don't have time to lay it all out or to lay out all my ideas, because these are just ideas. None of this is in place. But this is my feeling on the issue, that yes, there is a problem in diversifying workplaces. And that's a historical problem. That is a legacy. That's undeniable. I don't think that that's even up for debate. That's just kind of going back to my math. That's just math. It's just statistical, considering where we've come from in this country. So there's nothing wrong with saying, yeah, the playing field's been so uneven for so long, we really do need to focus on bringing certain people up to speed, but that doesn't mean the government needs to engage in discrimination to do it. So I'm, at this time, I am not in favor of affirmative action. But if you disagree with me or agree with me, go ahead and hit me up, KiraDavis422@gmail.com. KiraDavis422@gmail.com. Don't forget to look me up over at locals.com. Join Davis Nation. Use my code Davis, D-A-V-I-S, for a free 2-month trial. But that offer ends in September, so you don't want to miss that. And then you can decide if it's something you want to continue to do. Thank you so much, and I'll catch you next time on Just Listen to Yourself. If you don't like the way I talk, then why am I on your mind? If you don't like the way I rock, then why are we wasting time? We fight and we argue, you'll soon love me blind. If we don't mess this whole thing up, guaranteed I can blow your mind. One tonight I'm alive in a dollar sign, guaranteed I can blow your mind. I'm alive in a dollar sign, guaranteed I can blow your mind. Mwah.
The FCB Radio Network. First class broadcasting worldwide.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.